everyone. Welcome to a simulation of ARG Presents. I'm Amigo Aaron, joined by the all too real, the harsh fist of reality. It's the Brent.
It's true. I am real.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I wish you could hook a fantasy man tonight. Look, Brent. It's that time of the year, my friend, my compadre. That's right.
It's indoor tree time.
That's correct. It's simulated wall time, as it is every year. No, it's beautiful, delicious Christmas time.
Christmas is rather delicious.
It is.
I mean, it's not Thanksgiving delicious, but
no,
what is?
No. Well, our Thanksgiving was spent continuously playing wacky games. Well, soon thereafter,
yeah.
Thanksgiving.
Anyway. And it was awesome.
Yeah,
hey,
I had to get down with that.
Watch those episodes.
Yeah, there's more coming. So, if you joined us last week, we spun the wheel. We made the deal.
It's true.
And this week, Brent, we're going to be playing games in the sim slash tycoon world. But before we get into that, since the season's upon us, you know, we really don't necessarily do like a Christmas episode or unbox stuff or give gifts because we're both greedy bums and just just nothing.
You know, we're really more leeches of society.
We're takers. But I thought we would start the show here at Christmas time, to reflecting in a romantic way about past Christmases.
I'm out.
And what we enjoyed in terms of retro gaming. Now, because they always come with like, there's always a nice break. So, speak to me. Speak on this, as Razor Ramon would say. What Christmas memories rush back to you in the realm of retro computing and gaming, or wheel spinning, whatever toot your horn?
I have one vivid, okay, first of all, let me start this by saying I have no childhood memories. I can remember to about last week,
yeah.
And then all the lines from The Simpsons seasons 3 through 12, but everything else is lost.
Yeah, I think when I accidentally violently rammed your head into the stove, there may have been some damage.
So
in our younger days.
But so when I have a retro gaming memory, that's special because I have no memories. And I have one very special retro gaming Christmas memory. And that was the year I got a Game Boy, the original Game Boy.
Yeah.
Now, me, I was a sneaky kid, and I had actually unwrapped the Game Boy prior to Christmas, and not just unwrapped and been like, oh, I'm getting a Game Boy, because I was pumped, right? No. I unboxed the Game Boy, put batteries in it, played it for several hours, and then boxed everything back up, wrapped everything back up, and put it under the tree.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I played the Game Boy to death.
What did you get that first Christmas you had a Game Boy? Because the Game Boy, by the time you had gotten one, had been out for quite a while.
No, it was a couple years, but it wasn't.
Well, that's quite a while.
Yeah, it wasn't tremendously down the line.
Yeah.
I know I had games I had for my Game Boy. Tetris, of course. I had a wrestling game, a WWF wrestling
horrible
game. I had Monopoly. For that Game Boy, gosh, is it bad? Those are the only three games I can actually recall.
Didn't you have any Mario games?
I had Super Mario Land.
Yeah.
But I played the crap out of Monopoly.
Yeah.
And of course, Tetris. But I borrowed tons of Game Boy games because everyone around me had a Game Boy as well as my friends. So I did a lot of that kind of stuff. What about you?
You know, it's funny you should mention that. Getting in there and you know, we were bad kids, I guess, horrible. Because I did the something very similar, but it wasn't with the video game. You couldn't really get away with that with a video game. How's a bug around? Ladybugs in the middle of Christmas.
I got away with it.
Anyways,
I'm sure Mom and Dad knew.
This isn't really related, but I'm going to go into it. So, you know, I'm a big wrestling fan. Even when I was a kid, I was a wrestling fan. And they had this, I'm sure I've talked about this, but there was a wrestling game that was dice-based. And you had these cards for each wrestler. I wanted this game so bad, it ordered out of the back of a wrestling magazine. And I knew Mom had got it for me, so I did the same thing. I went in there and opened it up. And I even went, the wrestlers in it were all fictional. They were like recreations. So me and Hose got the game the same year, my buddy Hose. And we went in with Whiteout and just edited the card. And so when I opened it, the day I opened it, it was, I whited out and edited because I'd already done it before Christmas. Mom knew it, but it was just like, listen, you ruined your own surprise. You're a beautiful woman. She hid all the presents, so I couldn't do it anymore. So, not so good. We're not very good people.
Well, I here's something out of, especially being a parent myself at this point. I accept that mom and dad knew everything we did all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we're not good.
Well, that's not true.
We're very clever, too. The folks were. They could catch that sort of stuff. I've told you, my favorite memory of all time during Christmas is getting that Clark Computer disk drive, which we talked about. I remember playing the heck out of that day, and I always loved. That was my all-time favorite thing. But we did get other stuff for Christmas that was video game related. I believe it. Did you get your NES for?
No, that was my birthday.
What about your Super Nintendo? You remember when you got that?
That was also a birthday.
So most of your stuff was coming on a birthday. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Do you remember getting any specific games on Christmas that you remember getting anything? I don't either.
I told you, man. I have no memories.
We operated in series of hundreds of games, hundreds of bootleg games. Santa Claus is a dirty, rotten, filthy, stinking pirate, just like we were.
Also, I mean, when it came to console gaming, especially during the NES era, I rented continuously. It was 100% rent rate for me. I owned like 3 games.
Yeah, renting.
And one of them was so god awful. I don't even want to mention it on air.
You know, that was the way. Warriors and
Wizards and Warriors was fine. It was Deadly Towers that was horrible.
Man. Deadly Towers has its followers and likers. It's renting for consoles.
So does Satan.
When I moved, it's funny. When I moved to out to Lexington, there was a place there I found that would rent PC games. You know, and I remember thinking, "Oh, you're going to get taken to school, pal." And then I took him to school.
I had a buddy that rented PC games from GameStop all the time.
Yeah, there you go. So beautiful Christmas. We're going to move right in seamlessly, fluidly, into our topic this week. Here, it's beautiful. It's simulation and tycoon games. Now, Brent.
Yes.
Simulation and tycoon. A broad. Almost, some would say, idiotically broad category, because these two could probably be their own different path. But we actually sort of both chose one from each field. But what are your earliest memories of playing games of this sort?
Roller Coaster Tycoon.
That's the big one.
Absolutely.
For you.
Yep.
Why that one? And I mean, had you played anything before that when it was tycoon like?
Yes, but that was the one that really pulled me into.
Yeah.
Because first of all, roller coasters are awesome. And managing a park and being able to put your vision of a good amusement park into your paths, your creations, your rides, it was great. I played it for hours and hours, and I almost picked it. And I've played them ever since. I played Roller Coaster Tycoons. I played Planet Coasters. I played Theme Parks.
Yeah,
I played all those games.
Yeah.
To death.
I think the earliest Sim games I played, I'm just gonna stun you, were probably Sim City.
Oh yeah, I played that as well.
Back. I did have a cup of coffee with the Sim games. The ones I remember playing the most were Sim City and Sim City 2000, which I played some. But the one I played probably the most was Sim Earth. I played that one quite a bit.
But that one's garbage.
No, hey, listen, I don't know what to tell you. It's what I could get a handle on. And then in terms of the tycoon type games where you build like a business or mm-hmm. whatnot, really, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, I did try them. I would try like something like a theme hospital, and I played. In fact, one that I almost did for the show was the movie studio one.
Yep, that's a good movie maker.
I almost played that for the show, but I was when we picked these games this week, I was very ill, and I was like, man, I've got to pick something. So I ended up. It's funny. Should go ahead and talk about this. I ended up at first. I picked Tom Landry's the Strategy Football Deluxe, which was a football sim. Game where you literally pick the plays and you do all that stuff, and it is I like this game, although it's not the most popular. But I thought, man, I don't know if anybody was going to care to hear me talk about this. Once I started feeling better, I picked something a little more advanced, a little more interesting in my opinion. But that was a good one. But I did play that quite a bit. But tycoon games are not necessarily my bag.
They are certainly my bag.
Uh-huh.
I've played SimCities. I've played
a Tycoon game.
No, but I've played SimCities. I've played SimCopters.
Yeah. SimCopter. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that one.
I've played all of the different births of those. Now the big thing is oh my gosh,
I can't. It's a huge thing. It's so big.
City Skylines.
Yes.
I own that and I play it a lot.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, just The Sims, where you control people's lives. I play a lot of that.
The Sims. I did play. I will say I was a part of the early group that got into the first Sims.
Now,
it's a brilliant game in a lot of ways.
Well, the Sims, I enjoyed fiddling with The Sims. But I saw the path that they were going down with the endless parade of DLC.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, I'm not for that. I prefer, like, when you have an open community and the community people are putting mods out there. And now that's a fairly modern take on things. But when you have that kind of community support, you can really expand the game into more versatile things that it needs, and you don't have to wait for the developer to put something out, and in some cases just to grab money.
Yeah I will say I have warmed to these more in recent years. Me and Boat have played a couple things on the Amigos that have been surprisingly fun. We played one of these sim games that was super Sim Life on there.
Yep.
That I thought I was going to absolutely despise, and ended up enjoying that one in a weird way. It's kind of fun to make your own kind of weird creatures. And
yeah, I mean, then you've also got your spores.
Which I did. And it's funny, I played, but there was a Wii version of that. It was kind of the dumb guy version that I actually sort of enjoyed. So, I might be able to get into that.
A lot of people don't realize.
Or Black and White. And another
well,
one.
Black and White's a god game.
Well,
don't confuse it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I did cross the line.
Don't confuse
it. Yeah.
And Spore is really not a simulation game either. It's an evolution game. And evolution games are their own thing, and they have a rich history. A lot of people don't understand that they had evolution games back on, like, the Super Nintendo. And they were awesome. That's a wheel piece. Give me a pen.
No, we'll get it later. No one can read your writing anyway.
That's
what are you talking
true.
About?
Plus, I can't spell evolution.
There you And with that, we move on. So... we were tasked this week from the ridiculously, and I asked Brent last week, what are the parameters? There were none. It was crazy time. So we were asked to pick two games from this simulation and tycoon category.
Yes.
I'm going to start the show this week.
Oh, fine. Be that
way. I'll have to say, I really, being...
Drop the ball?
Being ill, no. Being ill this week, it made me, I had time to think, like, what am I going to do to play on this thing? And like I said, I originally was going to play Tom Landry. I love Tom Landry, the man. And probably most people know who that is. When I was a kid, he was the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, American football team. And he was a real great guy.
He was
actually a quality man. It's why I root for the Cowboys, who turned into be a bunch less than quality people.
Yeah.
I love Tom Landry. And he has a good game. But I changed my mind because I thought, you know, what would be neat to play? And also, it happened to coincide with an anniversary. So I ended up playing Activision's Space Shuttle.
Yes.
Space Shuttle was a game that I remember hearing about as a younger man for the originally released on the Atari as a very difficult, advanced game.
Yeah.
And we'll sort of go into why on that. So... Space Shuttle, it's the full title, Space Shuttle, A Journey into Space.
Of course.
Because that's, there you go. Developed and published by Activision, this is back in the glorious heyday of Activision, designed by Steve Kitchen of the Kitchen Brothers. Now, this got released on a surprising amount of platforms, Brent, I'll have to say. This, of course, the main release that I'd heard about was the Atari 2600 version.
Yes.
And I'll get into why, I guess, later. I looked at the Atari 8-bit version just because I have the XEGS there, and plus for another reason.
We have a difference there because I did look at the 2600.
That's okay.
They're
the same game. That's fine.
Although your game is easier.
Well, it probably is for certain reasons. Yeah. It also got a 5200 port. This was surprising to me. Now, from what I've heard, these ports came from the 8-bit Atari version, And so they're pretty much port server, but they look pretty close. It had a Spectrum version, a Spectrum release of this. The Amstrad got a release, the C64, the MSX. And I found out that they've released a version. Someone ported this over to the ColecoVision with the new Supercharger cartridge. It's not new now. It's been out several years. It's a fan brew, a fan-made homebrewed cartridge that sort of gives the ColecoVision like extra abilities, you know, okay. Extra memory and stuff. So yeah. someone ported this over to that as well. Now, one thing I wanted to mention, this past week just happened to be the 40th anniversary of the Atari computer.
Oh.
And so I thought, well, this is a good time to have a look at something on the Atari. It's amazing to me to think that I don't know how much you get to play with the Atari computer back when you were a kid, just out the neighbors.
Just the neighbors,
yeah. I was the same way, but I mean, it's amazing to me that that computer's been around for that long, 40 years. It's quite remarkable that computer has been in play for so long, but we're old, I guess, is the only thing I could say about it. I mean, if you think about the Atari computer, the 8-bit family, it was the best and worst thing that ever happened to Atari because they had a good setup early on that they never really changed it to their detriment. Now, by the time the ST and the Falcon, which we looked at, came out, I mean, they'd sort of held on to the 8-bits for too long, and they also tried to serve two masters for a while.
Right.
And it a lot of when you have a computer that lasts that long, you have a big community around it. I look at some of the old Atari magazines, and people are in there talking about the new Ataris coming out, and they're not happy that the support's going away for the old Ataris. And,
yeah.
And there's a lot of them,
yep.
You know. And I have a feeling, I always wonder if that had something to do with the overall failure of the of their later machine. So I mentioned this came out in 83. Now let's talk briefly about the actual space shuttle. The space shuttle. With the exception of the moon landing, from a NASA perspective, the space shuttle was probably America's greatest triumph and certainly our greatest tragedy in terms of space. Incredible set of vehicles. The original shuttle, as you're talking, an expenditure of almost $210 billion U.S.
Yeah.
Probably more than that now. I mean, a huge investment to put in these space shuttles. If you don't know what the space shuttle is, which I don't know, there's probably people that probably don't now because they haven't launched one for so long. But it was America's space vehicle, reusable space vehicle that had a cargo bay in it that you could use to launch satellites.
And that's what it did most of the time.
They would go up and hook up with the space station up there,
resupply,
you know, and carry men back and forth. And it was a real, I mean, I remember so much the early days of the shuttle. When I was a little kid, when they were doing the testing of the shuttle, they would hook the space shuttle to the back of a big, huge airliner.
Yep.
And they would go up in the air thing, and the thing would detach, and they would float it
test
down,
it.
You know, test
yep.
it down. And this was always awesome. You know, and it was the Enterprise, and you're like, oh man, they knew what they were doing. NASA was like, we got to ramp up interest in this thing, and they did. And I remember the Star Trek guys were there all the time. You'd see them there. They'd invite them out to NASA, and they would. I mean, because everyone loved Star Trek, and so it's funny. Star Trek directly had a contribution to the NASA's shuttle program in a weird way. People were interested not just because of the Star Trek guys, but just because this was an awesome piece of kit, and then they. Space shuttle launches became routine for the longest time in the 80s. They launched over and over and over, everything went well until the unfortunate events of the Challenger launch, which I'm sure everyone now, if you know anything about space shuttle, knows that this Challenger launch, they had a leak in the one of the solid cell or the solid fuel rocket boosters, I believe. There was an O-ring that had went south, and it leaked fuel, and it was bad. And
watch that live in elementary school.
It's funny. That was a horrible time for that to happen.
It was bad.
Because they had a teacher on there. I was at home.
Yep.
I was at home that day watching the launch, and it sucked. I mean, there's no good way to blow up a space shuttle, but that was a wake-up call for America, for the world, that said, hey, listen, this is not the future yet. You can't just routinely launch spaceships up and down. And then, of course, We had we still went back and had more launches before the Columbia also blew up. This was on reentry, which was another bad one because that was also just horrible. So the first flight of the shuttle was April 12th of 81, and the last flight being July in 2011. So, but this is only a couple years before Space Shuttle the Game came out. And Space Shuttle was the rage. It was a kind of a quirky looking little vehicle. The shape was neat. People were into it. And they weren't just into it because it was our cool spaceship. It had its own little personality. And so, lo and behold, here comes Space Shuttle, A Journey into Space. Now, my first thought when this came out was, holy smokes, how can this exist on the Atari 2600? The fact that you are driving the space shuttle with a joystick and a button seemed ludicrous at the time. Well, I'll have to give Steve Kitchen credit. Of course, the guys at Activision were the sharpest knives in the drawer.
Yeah, at that time, especially.
And they weren't just going to put out something and have you like... Yeah, I got to ask you, because your reaction when I picked this, I was surprised. You probably had never played this. Because
no.
Brent thought this was... I assume you thought this was going to be some kind of shooting game or...
No. I thought it... I knew it was a flight sim.
Yeah.
I just did not realize at the time how detailed of a flight sim it was.
Yeah, that's why I was like, yeah, wait till you play it. So, they tried to be very realistic with this game. And so, to be that realistic, you can't just put a game out there and hope it, and you know, just a bunch of boring crap. You have to actually have a more controllability. And so in the 2600 version of this, it literally uses the toggle switches on the 2600 as instrument operations.
Yep.
And it even came with an overlay that would sit on top, that would go over the thing, that would tell you which of the switches that were what they did. You've got landing gear, and you've got your orbiting engine, and probably the most realistic version, because you're actually flipping little switches. You know, there were a lot of games. There weren't a lot. There were some games that manipulated the Atari. Such was the manipulation of the Atari that you could actually fiddle with the controls of the actual hardware. I always thought that was amazing that those guys had that sort of ability. Now, this was this is one of the highest end Atari games there was in terms of complexity. And so it was a natural port to the computers, because this is something that would probably make a lot more sense with a full keyboard, and it did. Again, I mentioned this had been done by Steve Kitchen. His brother Gary, they both worked at Activision. They both worked on a lot of cool stuff. Steve didn't do a ton of games, to be honest with you. He worked on some stuff, Dan. He worked on some stuff with his brother, including F-14 Flight Simulator. And he worked on some other things, including Crossbow and Carnival. So those are pretty good games.
Yeah.
But this is probably Steve's crowning achievement. So let's talk about this game. What do you do? And again, I played the Atari computer version. Brent played the Atari 2600 version, but
correct.
They are very, very similar.
Yes.
In the way they work. So this game starts off. Everything in this game is done from the back, from inside, effectively a cockpit view.
Yes.
Of the shuttle. You don't really see the shuttle in this, do you?
Not a single time.
And so
during the game.
On the 8-bit version of this, on both versions, the visuals are the same. You're looking, picture yourself in the shuttle looking up at the sky. Now, you see clouds drifting by. You have to start the countdown. Well, first, there are a few different game varieties that are important. Game one is a total simulation where you just control a few things. The good thing about game one is that it lets you feel like you're not an idiot. You know, you can actually have things happen where you have a clue. Game two is where you're in control of most things, but it's sort of lenient. And in game three, it's just, you're on your own.
Harsh taskmaster of reality comes crushing down.
I will tell you, I didn't even attempt game three. I was on game two, but I did play game one just to get my feet wet. So when you start the game, you have short keyword shortcuts to do a lot of stuff. So for starters, you have to start the countdown, which I believe is L. You have to start the engines, all right? And so then you will be presented a slider that's marked C with a slider marked T under it. And then you have to, you're controlling the slider. And this is the amount of thrust you're using. And the computer will calculate, which is the computer will tell you where the thruster should be. And you've got to try to match it with the joystick.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you got to do. You've also got to stay on a flight path by using the joystick controller left and right to stay on this flight path, right? So you've got, this is while controlling the thrust, yeah. Right? The game's got, really the visuals on this are actually surprisingly good. Again, consider what you had to work with.
They're certainly good enough.
It's more surprising. I mean, on the Atari computer, this was no great shakes visually, but on the 2600, this was pretty remarkable at the time.
Now, something with the 2600 that needs to be noted
is,
while on the 8-bit computers, you had all of your instruments and all of your readouts right there.
Yeah.
That was not the case on the 2600. The 2600, you had to cycle through. You had one screen, and you had to cycle through what you're looking at. And that makes a huge difference because all the measurements have to be precise.
Yeah, I agree. I did dip my toe in the pool in the 27 version. I like the computer version a lot more, which one would expect.
Yes,
you know, but I mean that's really one of the few changes that you can even talk about. So once you launch and you've got to stay on this targeting one, and you also have to keep your fuel in line. Now, if you're playing on game three, even if you're playing on game two, if you don't keep your fuel thrust in line with the computer's, the computer where the computer
recommendation
says it should be, you could lose right there.
You can use it at any point.
and on game three, it's a real harsh taskmaster. We don't do that right. So, as you're moving up, if you've ever seen a shuttle launch, it will drop those the booster rockets, and eventually it'll drop that solid fuel tank that's under it as it launches into space. And you don't see that stuff here, but you do. It is simulated by sound and flashes and whatnot like that. You also flash as you're going out of this atmosphere. And so the first part of this game, I didn't find it super hard, but it's doable, okay? Then you get to the second part. Now, because you're on a mission, if the mission was just a joyride to shuttle up into space, we're laughing. But if your mission is to go up and meet up with a satellite,
rendezvous with a satellite,
then you got problems. So the second part of this game, this is where the game's like, oh yeah, you've got to hook up with a satellite. So how does this work? Well, what you've got to do is it's like a flight path almost.
Yeah.
And what it is, once you've established Earth orbit, and by the way, you have to shut your engines off if you don't. Otherwise, you got problems.
You burn up all your fuel.
By the way, you are using fuel during this mission. So fuel is very critical. Then once you establish orbit, you've got to match up your orbit with an orbiting satellite that you've got to rendezvous with. Well, sounds easy. It's not. It's incredibly tough. On game one, no problem. I zoomed right up there. But the game one, the computer is not just holding your hand, but it's also patting your head and pushing you along on a bike.
You know how, when you've got a younger brother or something and you give him the controller, but it's not actually plugged into the system and he thinks he's playing it. That's what that is.
That's a good analogy. It's exactly what it feels like.
It's like, I'm winning. It's like, sure you are, kid.
So once you get into space and you've got your orbit and you will have basically two gauges, one that is like an X and Y axis gauge, and one sort of like the Z axis gauge. And what you're trying to do is use the joystick to put a dot in the center of a little target on one of the gauges while you use the thruster to build up the speed on the other gauge, or the lack of thruster, all right? You're moving in three dimensions here, folks, and you've got to match up your orbits and come up and hit that satellite. Let me tell you something. This is tough.
Yeah, it's really,
and
really
if you,
hard.
And if you, like, I've seen the satellite. I've came pretty close to the satellite, but you have to, if you get it right, it'll say rendezvous on it.
Yeah.
All right. And then once that's done, you can begin your landing procedure. Up to that point, you're boned. And so I can't tell you the endless amount of time I spent chasing this satellite around the Earth. Because if you miss it, you sort of like have to wait till things. You can't just turn this bus around.
No.
Because you're orbiting the Earth.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't like Star Wars. You can't turn on a dime. You got to go basically fly all the way around the earth and try to catch up with the satellite again and try to dock the darn thing.
Well, it's, yeah.
I was able to do it in game one, but in game two, I tried and tried and tried and tried and tried. And so I thought, man, there's got to be a trick to this. So I went and watched some guys do it. And trust me, experts at this game tried and tried and tried and tried. It is not simple to do. And I've seen people that I would consider probably pretty good players have all kinds of trouble. It doesn't sound like much trying to use those controls to get this, but it is. And on top of everything else, like I said, there are things you have to remember to do. By the way, you're burning fuel the whole time.
Yeah.
And so as you're burning fuel, you got to get home. So you have X amount of fuel to get back. So this is very tricky. And then let's pretend that you dock the satellite. Like I said, there's no like great musical interlude or anything. You just dock. It says Ronnie Hood. It's time to go home.
It beeps.
Yeah.
It goes beep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should mention that you got to open up your cargo bay doors, which you got to do that too.
Well, you have to rendezvous with the satellite.
You've got buttons for all this stuff. And I'm skipping all these shortcuts, but you've got, when you establish orbit, you've got to turn off your engine. You've got to turn on your orbital like motors.
You
got to open your doors. You got to make sure when you're coming down for a landing, you lower your gear. Don't land without it. That's something else you got to do. You got to close the doors before you start going down or you'll get killed. You know, it's hard.
On top of that, when you start your descent back to Earth, you can't just nose down into the atmosphere. You have to turn around and basically back it down.
Yeah, and also, well, that's when you go, there's another flight plan thing that takes you, that does that. You know, so... Not easy to do. It's funny. We just flipped. If you're watching the video version, this guy just rolled up and rendezvoused with no problem. It's so much harder than that. So then you begin your descent down, like we said. Now you go back down to the atmosphere. There are some pretty cool effects in this. I think visually they do a pretty good job. I thought the sound was pretty good. I will say the 8-bit is not much different sound or
It's identical.
It looked like I said the gauges and stuff were set up better. But that was about it. Eventually, if you're good enough to get back down to Earth through controlling your thrust and your pitch and everything, you will see land. And then you will have to land this thing. Now, landing it, since I didn't get to do it in Game 2, I don't know how hard it is. In Game 1, it wasn't that hard. But you actually do physically, manually land it. That's one thing you do get to do in Game 1. So I got it down. So it was cool. I thought that was nice. And that's the end of the game. That's it. This is a one bit basis. That's your mission. Get up, get down. It's like I said. It seems they knew how hard it was because they didn't put anything else in there. That was it. This is one of those cool games from Activision that if you scored high enough, you could send in for a patch, and so you can get a space shuttle patch, which Activision, that was a cool gimmick back in the day. Did you ever know anyone that had any of those patches?
Not from the mail and stuff, but I own and know people who own merchandise from like in-store tournaments.
Yeah. So yeah, really.
Yeah.
No kidding. I would like to have a collection of those patches, but something tells me this thing probably go for a small fortune.
Money.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So once you land, it's done. That's the end of the game. What did you think of this one? Again, I hope you judge us on the basis of when it came out and what it does. What did you think of this one?
I told myself I wasn't going to kill this game.
Okay.
Because what it sets out to do, it does, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
It being a simulation of a spaceship, if you were a kid and this was your thing, you have to be a teen minimum, because the manual on this thing is a requirement.
Oh, yeah.
Because the manual says all the altitude and speed settings that you need to hit to do the things.
It teaches you what to do. I had to read it. Did you? I'm assuming you did.
I had to
look through the manual and read it, yeah.
But, and that's all awesome.
Yeah.
But as a game, and I'm not talking about, I don't like this. I don't like simulation games. This is too hard. As a game, this is a one-trick pony.
It is.
And it is a scam that they didn't have more missions or at the very minimum a tutorial.
Well, game one is a tutorial.
No, I disagree. Because it doesn't tell you what to do. It just makes it easier to do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. I mean, but you could follow what it does and just try to recreate it.
I totally respect this game. I think it did things that were unheard of at the time.
Yeah.
However, they did not go the extra mile. They said, you know, this is... They marketed this as... fly the space shuttle, but this was not something you could pick up and play and enjoy. This was something you picked up and studied, and they didn't sell it like that, and I think that's a tragedy.
Well, I mean, and when this came out, they did sort of say, like, I mean, it, I don't know, I was too young for know what the marketing was.
Well, I looked up some of the stuff, and it was great. But it could have been so much better, and it could have been so much more accessible. And by failing to do that, I cannot recommend playing this unless you are someone who has a great love affair of that era of the space shuttle and want to see the Atari, especially the Atari 2600, pushed to its limits in simulation. But if you are a casual anything else, pass.
This is not a game I'm going to pick. It's not combat where I'm just going to hop in and be like, hey, how about a quick ride in a space shuttle? But I think it was, I really do. Let's put it this way, it made an impression on me since 1983. It was, when we said simulation, I thought, man, what could I do that's really richer, really richer? And this is the first one that came to mind. So I remembered it, and it had a rep. Like I said, if you look at the some of the critical reviews of this game, and this one I found in Wiki, for a 1984 review for Video Game Magazines, a fellow named Dan Pearson wrote, and this is, I think this sums it up, Space Shuttle is not a game for everyone. It requires a considerable amount of patience, and perhaps not too surprisingly, a considerable amount of brain power. People who seek the visceral thrills of the standard shoot 'em up may ultimately find the simulation's complexity frustrating, but for those of you who are ready for a richer, more sophisticated experience, you will probably recognize Space Shuttle for the monumental achievement it is. And I think that's exactly what it was. This is a game that did not get these games were not available then. That's my point on that. And I think that gives it some a special place in the area. Now
I agree, but it took that and said,
I will
we've
say
done
this.
Enough.
When they ported this to the computers, you would think there'd be a lot more action.
Yes.
So that, there you go.
And not action. There a lot
more stuff,
training missions. Because think of all the things they could have had you do.
Well, of course, this is an ear report.
So I'm not going to kill it. I'm not going to kill it.
You shouldn't kill it because it's good. eBay. I found someone selling the cart only for the 8 bits for. And by the way, the Atari 2600 version. It's just you could get them. I found they're not expensive. For the 8 bits cart going, someone's trying to get $30 for the cart, and I saw a boxed version going for $100. Now I will say, I mean, that's what they wanted. Well, Atari 8-bit software, if that's your bag, it's all over the map. I can tell you, as being someone
price-wise,
who sold
some
of it, it's crazy time. So that was Space Shuttle. I actually enjoyed going back. I will say I felt good. It's one game when you do well, you feel good. When I was successfully able to launch and stuff, I felt pretty good, you know, getting up to space. But I wish I could have hit that satellite, but that's the way she goes. So, Brent, you went a whole different route from simulation to tycoon.
I did. I went the tycoon route. This is a game I had some familiarity with prior to this, and I chose Game Dev Tycoon. Aaron, growing up, you might have known this, you might not know this. I always wanted to design video games, as I'm sure a lot of youths did. And I actually...
Utes?
Yeah, that's right. That's the term they use now. Uh-huh. Get with the lingo.
Yeah, right.
I believe they spell it
E-U-T-S. I know that's from my cousin Vinny. What's a ute?
But I wanted to design video games, and I actually attempted to go to college for it until I found out I did not have the math talent to accomplish
there should be a
computer science.
There. Math, comma, talent.
Well, no, because I am a published video game level designer. Thank you.
I knew it was coming.
So this game allows you, without knowledge, or skill to put yourself into a game developer, working out, you start working out of your garage, piecing together games in the most rudimentary way to begin your career. Before we get into the gameplay of it, let's talk a little bit about the game behind the scenes. This was developed by Greenheart Games, by another brother pair, Patrick and Daniel Klung. They have this as their first entry into gaming, I believe, and they were inspired by Game Dev Story. And let's talk about the elephant in the room real quick. Game Dev Story came out several years before this game as a mobile title. And Patrick and Daniel have made it very apparent and have not been coy. This is highly inspired their game. And some people would say it didn't only inspire it, it was a direct ripoff. They just took it.
And, some people would say that?
Yeah, a lot of people would say a lot of people would say this is just, you took the mobile version and you put it on a computer, and then you took that computer version and put it back to mobile.
Right.
And I can't defend that. They did expand upon the concepts, but there's no getting around the fact that they said, I want to do that and make it better, and that's exactly what they did. Is it right? No. I mean, probably not to the extent that they copied the game. Obviously not like copied the code or anything, but copied the framework. However, I do think that where Game Dev Story didn't really show that they were going to move forward anymore with the game, and these people took the ball and kind of ran with it and expanded a lot of things, I'm not going to fault them for it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So with that out of the way, because that always comes up when you talk about these games, let's talk about Game Dev Tycoon. When you boot up the game, you are sitting in your garage and at a little desk, and you are tasked with assembling a game. And you start with just the basic of technologies. You have a few concepts that you've got researched, and these can be concepts like pirate games, alien games, romantic games, dance games. The genres are extensive.
I was wondering, when you start a game, is it different every time?
It is random.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It is random.
Because I remember one of the first ones I got when I first played this was fashion.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's completely random. Yeah. And what you do is you take that subject matter and you pair it with a genre of game, being it role-playing, action, adventure,
strategy.
Yeah. And these are all things, as the game goes on, you can expand. You can expand what games you have available, the subject matter, and you can even expand what kind of game types you're doing. You can go into MMOs and that sort of thing. So you pick your subject and you pick your type of game, and now it's time to build the game. And you do all of this with just menus. It's all menu clicks. You can't play the game after you build it. It's all just correctly pairing subject A with type B, and then you go in and you say, okay, what kind of graphics do I want this to have? And you start out with text or 2D, rudimentary 2D graphics.
Mm-hmm.
And you pick that, and you say, okay, do I want this to be a lot of game design, a lot of level design? You know, and you have bars that you adjust. Does this game need a lot of world building or a lot of dialogue? And you go through these menus and you adjust them and you try to pick things that make sense. Because if you took like a dancing game and made it an action dancing game, with the exception of Michael Jackson's Moonwalker, I don't think you're going to pull it off. And the game...
What about Ooh La La? There was some action in that. She was beating guys up while she danced.
That was rhythm. That was not action at all. That was rhythm.
She was whooping butt while she danced.
No.
Aliens are flying everywhere.
So if you pair up things well and that makes sense, the game will go to market. It will get reviewed by magazines on a scale from 1 to 10. And depending on how well your game reviews is how well your game does in the market. and then you are you earn money accordingly, and then that cycle continues until you add, you know, you get out of your basement into an office, you start hiring staff, you expand what systems you can put these things on, and then as time passes, more systems become available, and it goes through the systems in as in real life. Of course, they can't use the real names. You can get patches that add the real names.
I was going to ask. Yes, that was the first thing
absolutely.
I was going to ask.
So you play. You go through the NES era and the Genesis and the Super NES, and it even has bits of gaming news.
Do you start with the same computers every time? Like that when I
yes.
started my first game, we had there was a C64 ripoff and then the PC.
Yes, and the PC,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, you always start in the same era, and you can adjust how quickly or slowly time passes. But, you know, you have to license these consoles when they come out. You know, to put a game on the NES, you can't just make a game for the NES. You have to pay for the licensing fee and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you have to pay for it for, like, the Game Boy. You have to pay for it for each system.
For each system,
cheap
that's
bums.
Right.
You didn't have to license stuff on the Master System.
Yeah, well, that's what developers
and
have
those
to
licenses
do.
Are pricey, too.
And then you even do things like design your own game engines. And you want to do that because it makes things that you do cheaper, and you do research to get more elements. You know, you start with 2D graphics, but then you can go to 3D. You can go multiplayer, cutscenes, and it keeps snowballing into towards the end of the game. You have this huge, huge things of things to choose from that you want to do. And it gets more complicated because as you get more options, things get more expensive, things are harder to develop, and they have more risk of failure. And if you fail, you know, a few failed games and you're out of business, you run out of money. And it even allows you to do things like hook up with publishers, go to E3.
Do spec work.
Yeah.
Mention that, yeah.
Yeah, contract work. It's a pretty deep little game. At its core, though, and this is something you have to understand. At its core, you pick a game, and then you have to match up the predetermined correct answer for those games. For example, if you wanted to make a Game Boy game, you couldn't make a mature dancing simulator for the Game Boy and it do well. Because the Game Boy, it pre-programmed in, it says the Game Boy is good at these type of games, targeted at this age group. You know, that's the type of game you have to put onto the system to be successful. And that is the game, is figuring out what you can do on a system, what genres fit with what types of games. And at its heart, that is what the game is. What did you think about this game, Aaron?
Because
I know you certainly had not played this before this week, correct?
When you picked this and I looked at it, I was like, this is crap. It's like, I could tell you, this is some cheap Steam garbage. Steam garbage. And so I came out here to play it the other day, and on your account, well, your account, I didn't have the password. I was like, okay. So I went and looked. Well, until as of the filming of this episode, until January 2nd, the game's half price, $5. So I was like, so I'm going to pay $5 for the steaming pile of Steam and try it. So I played it. I grabbed it. I put it on a computer and loaded it up. And, you know, Tycoon games, you know, I don't like menu-driven stuff. I get confused easy. I got a bad memory. I don't like the managed stuff. I hate all that stuff. So I loaded this up. And I can say when I loaded it up, I played it for 5 hours. I played it for 5 straight hours. That's why I'm so tired. Because I played it for 5 hours. I played 2 hours yesterday, and when I got home last night, I played it for 3 more hours, and I was up till 2:30 in the morning. It is fun, okay? Everyone, it's neat to start at the beginning. It's neat to see the reviews come in. It's cunningly designed. You can see this came from a phone because it's cunningly designed to make you want to play more, a lot more. And
it does have that one.
Turns flow seamlessly into one another.
Yeah, it does give you that just one more game. Well, I'm going to design just one more game.
By the time you release a game, right? You release a game, right? Well, just like in the real world, you don't just sit there. you've built up enough research points to look into creating a new genre of game, or creating better sound, or maybe even putting together a game engine, or maybe you've made enough money to where you can put a real nice game engine and take a big leap ahead of people, or maybe you've gotten enough money to license to put something on the Game Boy. The possibilities there are neat. When you make, this game sort of reminded me of that game we're talking about, the movies game.
Yeah.
Where you sort of, except in that, you get to see your little movie. Even if you don't make it, they sort of make one for you. And this, it's unfortunate, you never get to see your own game, which I would love something where you can see a little something.
You could obviously see why they couldn't do that, because there are so many mixes.
But there, what they could do, what I would love, this game is fun, but it could be awesome. And I'm going to tell you what they could do to make it much, much better, okay? As far as I can tell, as you get to the game, because I've started two games, and it's pretty, the way the industry falls is exactly like it did in real life, pretty much. Well, what I would like to see is if you put a lot of support behind, say, my goal was like, I'm going to support the crap out of C64 so the Amiga can be awesome, because I want the Amiga to
You
want to
change history.
I want them to make it so if certain systems get a lot of support, they could be the ones that win. I don't want actual history. I want different history.
You know? That would be a much different game.
I would also like to see it when you release a game, if it's a big hit. I would like to see magazine covers. I would like to see the cover story with them killing or praising your game somehow. I think that would be a lot of fun. Some like CinemaWare touches.
With your title of the game on there.
Right. Yeah, I don't have to see screens, but like they know the genre, so they could sort of just
They could kind of fake it.
You know, and you know, we've seen all those old magazines out there, you know, that, so you the way they used to put those covers on it would be pretty fun. You know, this game, it is incredibly, it's funny, it builds up sort of like a real business. You're in your garage. I've just gotten to the point, I had my first game I got 4 10s and a 9.5, so like that, it was like real close. I was like, son of a gun. So I came real close to getting, but anyway, my game blew up.
Oh, yeah.
Sold like hundreds of thousands of copies. And my very first game sold 16,000 copies. Like, it started out great. And actually, being a gamer helps you do better at this game.
Oh, sure.
You know, but you can try some real crazy things. Like, something else you can do that I thought was fun. Like, I got to a point where I was almost out of money. And so I did some work for another. Like, it's almost like Ocean called you back in the day. It's like, listen, we need. Someone's got to do this Street Hawk game.
Oh, publisher work,
for the Spectrum. Yeah. It's like, I'll do it. You know, and you've got to get it in on time. You can release games with bugs in them if you don't want to wait around to spend the extra money. I never did that. And something else that's neat is, like, I needed quick money, and so I took and it'll let you take a chance. Like, I distinctly remember, I was like, listen, I don't want to pay the money, because the development on the C64 was more expensive than the PC. Early on, and so I developed a fashion game on the PC. I knew it was crap, but I released it because the entry's so low and the returns were enough to keep me floating for a while.
That's it,
You know, and so you can sort of see how this actually happens. That's what was remarkable about it, you know. And then once you get rolling, you can see how these companies get rolling. They get bigger, like you expand. Like, I just moved into my new building. But I'm right point now where the games are getting real expensive to make.
Yeah.
And so you can go broke quick.
Yeah.
If you have a dud.
If you got a couple flops.
If you put one that gets a 2 or 3 after you'll take a bath. Sometimes you'll put the wrong rating on them, and then that'll hose you.
Yep.
You know, if you're trying to hit a certain audience, you know, and so it's always a risk. They did a good job. They did a good job with taking the industry and making you feel like that this is the way the industry goes. I mean, it mirrors it quite well, and I really thought that was a neat aspect of it. Listen, y'all know me. Again, I'm not a big sim guy. The menus are easy. The complex doesn't really ramp up, but it just gives you more options as you go. You know, as far as I could tell. The research stuff is simple. It's whoever designed the interface for this is quite intelligent, because this is the perfect interface for the ultimate casual tycoon game.
It is.
You're not going to go in here and play Sim Life. This is this is like Sim Dumb Guy. You go in there and have a good time, and hey, I'm the dumb guy. And I liked it.
And so, as you get farther, things do get more complicated because you have more options.
Right.
A few things to mention about this for people who might go out and pick this up. Speaking of which, you can pick this up on Steam right now during the Steam sale if you're watching this live or the week it's released. $5. Do you think it's worth $5?
I said that already.
Yeah,
I know,
it's certainly worth $5.
Oh, yeah, $5. Mm-hmm.
A few things to keep in mind. If you're releasing games on your own, you get all the money, right? So that's a good way to go.
Yeah.
But it's harder to reach your fans because you don't have as much market share. You don't have as much reach. Stick with a publisher. Make the games that the publisher wants you to make because when they release your game, as long as you hit their market scores and you make the type of game they want you to make, you earn fans faster. And once you get a fan base, you know, 100,000 fans or so, then you can start releasing your own games, and it kind of snowballs a little bit easier. Now, you don't have to. You don't have to do that. You can just make your own stuff. But that is something I would recommend.
Which I did not ever do that. Yeah. I always self-published. But, I mean, there are a lot of angles you can take. I feel like an infomercial for this game. But I got to tell you, this is a winner. I knew when I was looking for video to put in the background here, I was like, man, there's a lot of videos about this game.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, it's all those goofy, like, we're wacky internet YouTube guys. Let's play this game. They're going like, and I thought, man, there's a ton of these wacky guys. This game must have some popularity.
Well, this was released back in 2012.
Yeah. Really? Funny, that long ago.
Funny thing about this game.
Yeah.
The developers were no fool.
Yeah.
They knew they had a few things going against them. They knew that they were a blatant ripoff of a homage to game dev story.
Yeah.
And they knew that the game was going to get pirated. So they said, you know what? If you're going to pirate our games, we're going to make it easy for you. Here it is. And they released torrents with their pirated game.
Yeah.
And people were grabbing it, you know, like it's just the reality of gaming.
That's
people
weird.
Were grabbing it. So people were playing it and they were getting onto forums and they were saying, hey, this game's too hard. They said, you get to a point where all your games just get pirated and there's no way to stop it. Well, what the devs had done is if you got their torrented game, they had an anti-piracy thing in there that would make it so the game got, you would sell less and less copies and get more pirated as you went along.
That's the best thing I ever
so
heard.
So these people are actually telling on themselves. You know, when they were complaining on the official forums, like, I don't get it, man. They keep pirating my games. It's like, oh, I wonder why that is. So yeah.
That's good.
That was anti-piracy measure they put in themselves.
It was very clever. I love that. So, I personally give this one, and I never thought I'd give a tycoon game the full seal of Amigo Aaron endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for $5, this is worth picking up and worth playing. Even if you play it for, you know, 10 hours, 5 hours, get a chuckle out of it. $5, you'll never get that kind of deal.
And it's got replayability.
As you get different topics to start with.
Yeah.
You know, you can even start a few games to try to get a topic that you really want to build a game for, or you think that you can build a good game around.
And the puzzle elements of it matching the stuff up. I mean, I just use common sense. I didn't play
for the most
like
part.
A, it's not really like a puzzle game to me. And you end up getting into stuff like your magazine influence and going to conventions and doing all that crazy stuff. You get a big bunch of employees.
It's very expansive.
I love it.
You know what else?
You know what's not expansive? It's just hard and fast. That's the freaking wheel.
Brent. Oh, the wheel.
Fire that sucker up. Fire that sucker up. Now, what did you add this week, Brenny?
Aaron, we added the perennial favorite, Chat Choice.
Oh, good God, no. So
the chat hasn't got to decide quite enough, Lisa.
How are we doing on chat? We got some good people in there today?
We always have good people.
All right. Oh, my God, what a chill. Here we go. Right around you guys. And, you know, every time Chat Choice is on there, it almost instantly comes up. No, this time, what do we get? Brent, read the wheel. I'll read it then. We've got, oh, good God, no. Brent, it's edutainment.
Yes!
It's edutainment. Brent, explain to them this word you made up because you're an idiot.
This is a game that is going to have education elements. And no, I am putting one stipulation into effect right now. You cannot pick Oregon Trail.
Okay, oh, that's a fair deal. Edutainment. So this is on any system from any era?
That is correct.
So if it got released yesterday, I could pick it if I want to.
Absolutely.
Edutainment. Now, most people don't really say it like that, do they? You don't usually say edutainment.
Nope.
Edutainment.
That's right.
So I need to find out where someone gets beat with a cane.
As long as they're learning.
Good God. So while we're sitting here, why don't you... shout out to the fine folks in the chat room.
You know, we always have a pretty good chat room, and today is no exception. We got Picard, we got Roush, we got Paul Kitching, we got Pixels at Dawn, we've got me, I'm in chat, as always.
What
Silver, well, I almost called you Silver Beak. Your Silver Streak.
Can you increase your font?
6mm.
He's got his thing set on fine print.
Let's see what we got in the lurker. Alfred, we got Amiga Bang. I didn't see him say anything, but he's here, as he always is. Love you, dude. We got Pi Gravity? Pig Gravity? Why are you making me read stuff, man? Z9K9. See, I like that.
I like that. Beautiful. It's a pretty good crowd.
Yeah, and many, many more. If you didn't get mentioned, it's just because I can't read your name.
I mean, I'm telling you, the vision, he's got the print in microscopic, and you're not that well-visioned either.
No,
you need to increase
really
that
bad.
Font, dude. That's too small for a sucker. there you go. Yeah, great. So, we will be back in 1 week. And I believe next, now, Brent, what number episode are we on here? Did we determine
this? This is 97.
Episode 97 of ARG.
Yes.
So in 3 weeks, we will be hitting the big 100, episode 100. We're going to do something
special.
And
then we're done, right?
We're going to, no.
Oh.
We do hundreds more.
Oh.
Just keep on going. That's the way this gimmick works. Never stop. Never let you stop. We'll be doing something special. I think last week we fought over what we were doing, but we'll probably fight until that time.
That's
right. And then maybe that'll be the episode. We'll just get in there and do the battle.
Wow.
Finally, once and for all, for dominance. It'll be fun. So we'll have Edutainment next week. Then I guess we'll do one more. See, in the next 70 to 98. Yeah, we'll just have Edutainment. And then we'll spin the wheel that week. And then what's it we're going to do on the 1,000? Gosh,
that's it.
It's a crazy. It creeps up on you, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it does. It
creeps up on you. Of course, this is the holiday season, so we hope everyone out there has a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Crazy Kwanzaa.
That's right.
You know, whatever toot your horn. I want to...
Also a good New Year. That's a pretty universal one.
Well, we'll be back before New Year, so we'll be back for that.
Oh, no.
I want to thank our good buddy, BarkBit, for doing our closing theme.
Duncan Styles.
And the Dunk
for our opening.
Super awesome. Trippy space level Tron graphics that come on that make our show look far more quality filled than it is.
Yeah.
That's for darn
yeah.
sure. So
we do a lot of smoke and mirrors in this
oh,
thing.
Oh man, you ain't kidding. There's not enough mirrors and smoke to pull that trick.
So, in reality, Aaron's a squid.
That's true. So we will leave it there, Brent. I wish you all happy holidays, Brent.
Have a good one.
And we will see you guys next week. Merry Christmas.